Hey guys, what's up? It is week 350, and I have kind of a colossal box set to tackle for you. That's going to be almost everything in this video is this box set. It is the Inside the Mind of Coffin Joe box set. There's 11 films here. I'm going to break them down and go by each film, of course. Here's what's in the set. At midnight, I'll take your soul. Then this night, I'll possess your corpse. The Strange World of Coffin Joe. The Awakening of the Beast. The Eye of the Man. When the Gods Fall Asleep. The Strange Hostel of Naked Pleasures, Hellish Flesh, Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind, Embodiment of Evil, and The Strange Worlds of Jose Moica Marins. So that's like a documentary. So that's all the stuff on here made in 2001, I believe. So yeah, I guess we're going to start with the first one, At Midnight, I Take Your Soul. So At Midnight, I Take Your Soul was 1964, and Jose Moica Marins invented this character called Coffin Joe. Now, he lived in this small, superstitious town. It's a black and white film, and he basically dealt with a lot of these superstitious characters and everything as being kind of an oddity in the town. He had the long fingernails. He had a best friend and a wife at the time, but he had his eye on his friend's wife because he realized his friend, his wife, actually was barren. And Coffin Joe's main goal in life is that he believes he's superior. So he wants to breed with a superior woman and create a superior race to pass on his bloodline. Now, the only people he ever has sympathy for that he ever adores are children. He treats women poorly, he hates man, he hates superstitious things. So at first, we're introduced to Coffin Joe, we really don't know what his deal is. And it starts off kind of like with blasphemy. You know, he's eating meat on a Friday while a funeral procession goes by laughing. And you kind of get this idea that he has a lot of, you know, Lucio Fulci in him. Kind of this Fulci attitude towards superstition, the director and the character of Coffin Joe. And that's really kind of cool. And he also started to remind me of Nashe in this. Paul Nashe, a Spanish horror director and actor who did a slew of films and never really got the appreciation he deserved. So as this one progresses, it gets worse and worse until, of course, Coffin Joe starts to commit murders. And for 1964, a black and white Brazilian film, it's fairly graphic, you know. Early on this time, you know, people like, you know, Herschel Gordon Lewis were doing the gore film. So he was one of the first kind of doing these things. So yeah, he kind of somewhat creates like this bastardized version of the universal horror character, and he's unique and different, and he has this iconic look. Originally, Synapse put this out on DVD. There was an old Coffin Joe box set from Anchor Bay, which I probably will show that off a bit, which was a UK import. So this never really had a Blu-ray release in the States. I know there was Blu-ray, you know, HD prints that played on Brazilian television, if I'm not mistaken, but this is the first time it's ever had like a Blu-ray. It looks pretty good. It sounds good. We were told that the elements were lost or not good enough to scan on HD at one point, but I guess Arrow has remedied that. It looks pretty solid. It sounds good. Coffin Joe is a great iconic character that's built on sets. It's built on a budget, but his innovative, you know, and his drive really kind of pushed this film forward, and it made it kind of a classic, to be honest. I think that the first Coffin Joe film, At Midnight, I Take Your Soul, not just having a great title, it has a great legacy, and I think it's deserved. I think this is a really kind of iconic and memorable and historical horror film. And I really do love this one, At Midnight, I Take Your Soul. I would really recommend checking this out. Do not be fooled by the date. It's graphic for the time, for sure. It's not as graphic as a lot of the stuff a lot of people watch, but I think this is, it's a little past, you know, some of the Hammer stuff. And, you know, at this time, you know, Horror of Dracula was 58, and Curse of Frankenstein was 57. So we weren't getting into the harsher gore and everything until a little later on in the Hammer films, maybe the late 60s. But, yeah, this one really packs a punch. I'll go over all the features at the very end, because there's a slew of them, and I want to talk a little bit about each one. I don't remember what was on what disc, but At Midnight, I Will Take Your Soul, which is from a great introduction in this movie by the witch, a character who kind of sets up the story, and that's kind of where Coffin Joe's character would take that kind of character as in other films that aren't like about Coffin Joe, but he's in them. So yeah, recommended, good film. Next, we're going to tackle the strange world of Jose Marin's Mojica Marin's, or The Strange World of Coffin Joe. This is a documentary that is on the first disc, along with At Midnight I Take Your Soul. These discs are all double-sided, except Embodiment of Evil. And this, like I said, was made in 2001 earlier. And this kind of just catches up with Coffin Joe, and you see his kind of hometown, where he grew up. He talks a lot about his career and where he's at now. He walks around the streets, too, and you can just see, he's like, my parents used to own this movie theater. It's all run down now. It's really kind of sad and depressing. Also, he talks about censorship. You know, Coffin Joe had to deal with a lot of censorship during his career. He fought the censors tooth and nail, and his other films, sometimes they were cut or they had to change an ending to get it to put in the theaters. At the same time, he talks a lot about his loss of religion, because his films all have this kind of religious kind of take on religion, and basically they judge religion, or they say a lot of things about religion that are messed up, hypocrisy, all this kind of things, philosophy. It gets esoteric, it gets weird in a lot of the things he says, but he's always trying to prove a point. And he definitely talks about the moment he lost his religion. He talks about the censorship, talks about his career. There's other people that knew Coffin Joe on the set in here as well. And he talks about his love of comic books, which is interesting as well. And we talk about a film he made where there is bestiality, actual bestiality, because as much as a horror director as Coffin Joe is, or Marin's, he is definitely an exploitation and a transgressive filmmaker at the same time. He really didn't hold his punches. He kind of pushed forward with a lot of things he did. They're graphic, they're crazy, and some of them are obviously not exactly going to be, you know, appropriate. And the bestiality stuff is pretty intense. What gets really weird is the producer talking about it, talks about it in such a strange way, and such an off way, like off kilter way, and you're just like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, I don't understand if this is him trying to oversell it. But it's very uncomfortable and bizarre. He even talks about just some crazy set stories that happened on the sets. It's an interesting documentary. It's pretty cool. I mean, I think I wish it would have been made a little later, because Coffin Joe didn't die until 2020. So that's 19 years more that he could reflect it, maybe talked about Embodiment of Evil, all these kind of things. But it's still a very cool documentary, very much a timepiece of 2001 as well. So yeah, check it out. Next up, we're going to dive into the direct sequel to At Midnight I Take Your Soul, and this is This Night I Will Possess Your Corpse, 1967. Coffin Joe returns. He miraculously survives in the vein of, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon or any other universal monster that should be fucking dead. They find him with his eyes bulged out in the tomb, and they kind of bring him back to life, and there's not enough evidence to condemn Coffin Joe for the crimes he's committed. You know, basically the people being killing themselves and everything, and you know, the first film ends with him being haunted on Day of the Dead by the people that he's murdered and everything like that. Really cool ending. So this time around, Coffin Joe comes back with a vengeance. And right in the beginning, he saves his child from a motorcycle accident. And it's a really cool, kind of unique thing, because, you know, Coffin Joe is a villain, but he does have this redeeming quality of, you know, children of the future. He wants to protect them. And that's kind of what Joe Spinell wanted to do with the Frank Zito later on, right? He wanted to do that with that character in the sequel that was planned that never got finished. Mr. Robbie, he wanted to kind of carry that legacy on, right? And have that, you know, him be the protector of children, because he was abused as a child. So maybe that's a thing that Coffin Joe has in his history, but he wants to pass on that bloodline, right? So this time he kidnaps several women from around the village, and he runs them through a test, this kind of grueling test of throwing snakes and spiders and all sorts of tortures. Fairly graphic here. And that's a big chunk of the movie. This movie is close to 2 hours. This is the longest of Coffin Joe's films. And sometimes you do feel the runtime, but it's all perfectly fine. Coffin Joe has a lot of fights with the locals, and he catches the attention of, I think, a military guy and the mayor and all these people. And one of the main kind of guys after Coffin Joe is in a few of these Brazilian kind of exploitation movies from 81. He's in Violence and Flesh, where he plays the homosexual prisoner who rapes the rapist. And he's also in Lilium the Dirty, where he plays one of the victims of the titular character in that film. And he has an elongated dance sequence in a shower, which is kind of funny, but it was nice to see him in this film and pop up in a couple more Coffin Joe films as well. So this one, yeah, it kind of ends in a great spectacular fashion of him being chased down in the woods by a bunch of torch-wielding villagers, which is kind of like how these characters do usually die, right? But the part of this one that sticks out and is truly amazing is the color sequence, because Coffin Joe would go back and forth. I'm calling him Coffin Joe. I understand that's not his real name. It's just much easier for me to say than Jose Mojica Marins, all right? So he would always kind of use black and white for budgetary constraints, I imagine, and go back and forth between color and black and white in a lot of his films. Sometimes stylistic choices, and his choices would get more wilder and weirder as his film career went on, including a lot of his editing choices, very fast cut, very disjointed. So what happens here at the very at a huge pivotal moment here is, you know, he was haunted in the original film by the people he's murdered. This time, he is dragged straight to hell. And what we see is a weird rendition of hell that no one's ever really kind of duplicated. I mean, I feel like Burning Moon kind of tries to do it, but this is just such a weird, or We Are the Flesh, that whole idea. But this is so iconic, and the imagery is beautiful, and it's just weird, and it's snowing in hell, and there's just tortures and naked people, and he's walking over them, and he is actually the devil himself playing them. So it's like, it's so cool. It's just a scene that was way ahead of its time that I feel like had inspired dozens and dozens of filmmakers, and kind of makes Coffin Joe stand out and be that kind of character, that actor, that director who was a little ahead of his time, who was somebody who definitely made an impact on Brazilian cinema and horror cinema in general. And I think he really did that with his first two Coffin Joe films, and I think that they're vastly impressive. And I think this one is not as good as the first film. I think maybe because the first one feels a little fresher, I think, and this one's a little too long, but I think that hell sequence is just amazing and unmatched, and for what it is. It's just one of the best renditions of hell, and long and crazy and weird and good stuff. I would recommend it for sure. Next up from 1968 is The Strange World of Coffin Joe, and this is his anthology film. And now his other films are almost like anthologies because they have vignettes and they're disjointed, but this is a true blue anthology film following three stories here. Coffin Joe introduces it, and then we're on our way to go. The first story, they're all black and white. The first story reminds me a little bit of Mario Bava. I'm not saying that he lifted from him, and some of his color imagery later on reminds me of Bava as well, and I mean that as, you know, an utmost admiration. And I would say when I was watching that documentary, I didn't mention this, he reminded me of Joe D'Amato or Jess Franco, just that guy, John Roland, that just wants to make movies, and it's all he wanted to ever do, you know what I mean? So watching The Strange World of Coffin Joe, the first story here is about a group of kind of thugs that are in a bar, and they overhear this doll maker who has a lot of money say, you know, they're talking about him. Somebody says he doesn't keep money in the bank, he doesn't trust it, he keeps it at home. And they're like, So they end up following him home and to rob him, and they find his daughters there making dolls, these beautiful daughters. They decide, hey, we're just going to rape them and kill this old man and take all his money. And the dolls they have are eyeless. They're just creepy eyeless dolls. Of course, there's a twist, and we all know where the eyes are going to come from. This is a really good horror short in the anthology. Well worth your time. Very, very good. Very standard, but good. I enjoyed that one. Just unfolded very well and didn't wear out its welcome. So the next one is the most bizarre one, and this follows this homeless man, this kind of degenerate guy who's watching this woman throughout her life, and he sees her kind of going to work and getting married and buying these wedding shoes and all this stuff, and it's over a long period of time, and he's always in the background, and we see her life, and he's this voyeur. And at the very end, you know, something tragic happens, and he goes in and brings her wedding shoes, but he doesn't bring just her wedding shoes to her. He brings something a little bit more of himself to her, and we have some necro kind of stuff going on here. Bizarre short, the least horror the thing, but I guess if you're looking at it, you could look at it as a precursor to something almost like Aftermath by Nacho Cerda. I'm sure he's familiar with Coffin Joe. I'm sure a lot of filmmakers actually are, and I wouldn't want to directly compare it to, but it does remind me of that. You know, I guess that even you're not safe in death sometimes, but this one is interesting and weird. I still prefer the first one, I think, but this one is just different. You're starting to get a taste of what made Coffin Joe so bizarre and different and transgressive. The final story here is the one where probably some of his most graphic, bloody, gory things come from. So we have this doctor and his wife who are basically kidnapped to kind of witness what this kind of philosopher doctor kind of does and what he carries out. And they witness some of the most brutal, nasty things ever. There is somebody who is stabbed in the throat and bled out like a pig. The effect is so realistic looking. It's insane. Stephen Thrower in the special features mentions, I don't know how they did it. I watched it a few times. I cannot tell. Probably some farm animal that they shaved, and it looks real. The special effects are really top notch. There is a dinner table sequence, which is reminiscent of maybe Spider Baby, but maybe Texas Chainsaw later on would lift from that. But there's these crazy moments, and there's all out cannibalism and brutal cannibalism where somebody's eaten alive by a group of people. This one is by far his most perverse film. And it's kind of shocking, to be brutally honest, where your jaw drops and he just goes really far with it. But overall, The Strange World of Coffin Joe is a really cool anthology. I do like all the stories in here are worth watching. Doesn't wear out its welcome. It's brutal and weird, and some of them are standard, but he always includes the nudity and exploitation and violence in his films, as well as sometimes a message hidden within, or maybe sometimes hitting you over the head with it. But The Strange World of Coffin Joe, I would recommend this one as well. Okay, now we have one from 1970, and this is The Awakening of the Beast. Now, I had actually seen this one before for 1970, and I was kind of lukewarm on it. So putting this in, I was happy to see it remastered, but unfortunately, there has been a recall on this disc, and I know Arrow has pulled it, and they're going to make replacements from my understanding. But at 32 minutes, the subtitles stopped working. And if you switch to the commentary track where it has Coffin Joe talking at 55 minutes, those subtitles stop working. So I do understand the story. I do know what's going on here due to special features and seeing the movie before. So essentially what we have is Awakening of the Beast. We have a group of colleagues, doctors, discussing about degenerate behavior. And they're arguing back and forth. And who you know is Jose Mojica Marins is in there. And everybody's kind of shadowed out. And he's talking and he says, well, you know, he's talking about these true cases of degenerate behavior where, you know, possibly they kind of inspire his film. And we have all these different kind of vignettes of kind of small little gross stories of you know, degeneration and all these kind of things like degradation, all of the stuff you would imagine sexually and weird and bizarre. This stuff is not really that strong, but it's interesting. It's all black and white. It's okay. But the final act of this film is really kind of what pushes it forward and kind of makes its statement kind of land and stick and be impactful and be unique. And what essentially is here is all these people are given LSD and then they're shown Coffin Joe films. And essentially what happens is they kind of carry out these degenerate activities, but they all have these weird, wild hallucinations within the world, almost like they are in the hell scene in This Night I'll Possess Your Corpse. And they have these weird kind of outlandish, insane moments wandering through this hellscape that Coffin Joe has created for them. But of course, there is a twist. And the twist kind of gets to the point where it says kind of along the lines of, you know, the degenerate behavior is not brought on by the LSD or the films. It's brought on by the idea of that you are basically pushed into it, you know, that you expect to do these things because of the LSD or the films or whatever, how it's projected on society. It's unique, it's weird, it's different. And that's kind of the early things where you see here that he's kind of pushing boundaries, but also asking questions and also kind of pushing back at that censorship, right? So I think that The Awakening of the Beast is an interesting film, not my favorite of his, but interesting nonetheless. Obviously, the subtitles not working was a bit annoying, you know. But at the time, I did understand the film and I had seen it before, so it wasn't too hard to follow it. I would obviously like to revisit it with the subtitles, so hopefully I can get a replacement disc. But regardless, Awakening of the Beast, that's the one with the damaged subtitles. So if you ordered it and you got it in your hands now, they're probably going to do a replacement disc. But Awakening of the Beast is the only film that was basically affected by it, from my understanding, on the set. Even the other movie on the disc is fine. So, yeah. Okay, the next one is from 1971, and this is called End of Man. And this is the first film, and one of two films I don't care for in this set. So this one was not financially very viable for Coffin Joe or Jose, and I can see why. So in 71, he makes this movie, The End of Man, where he follows a different kind of character. It's kind of like the counterculture version of Coffin Joe, you know, even though he's counterculture. It's kind of like the hippie, almost Yoderowski kind of style character of Coffin Joe. And this character kind of wanders around, and it's very disjointed, and we follow these stories where he kind of will see like 5, 10, 15 minute segments, and he'll kind of enter the picture and talk to people. This one's less disjointed than the sequel of this one, but we kind of follow the story of an adulterous wife, and we follow the character from Violence of Flesh is in here, the actor, and he's also in This Night I Will Possess Your Corpse. He's in here as well as kind of a richer guy, and there's a scene where somebody is resurrected and whatnot. And that's kind of an interesting scene, and Coffin Joe talks about why he put that scene in there, because something true like that happened in his real life. But overall, this one just, it doesn't work as well for me. I think when Coffin Joe is getting his message across through horror, it becomes more cynical and more real, and it just comes across more digestible for someone like me. But when he's trying to do it in this kind of weird way, it just feels very dated and very, you know, 70s hippy-dippy culture, and it just doesn't work very well for me. And it's just kind of a little lackluster, a little weird, and I, you know, as much as all directors who put themselves in their films, or all directors in general, human beings, have ego, I think that his ego shows shows here more than any of his other films, and I know that could be, and it's not necessarily a bad thing because he's very talented, but at the same time, it just doesn't work for me, The End of Man. I just don't care for it. It's kind of a slog to get through, but 2 out of 10 or 11 films or whatever's in the set is not that bad, to be honest. So, you know, I just can't give this one a wholehearted recommend, but it is interesting to watch and look at Coffin Joe's trajectory through the 70s and watch this film as well. So it's up to you. I'm sure that some people will find more interesting things to say about it than I did, but The End of Man is not my thing. We're going to move on to the direct sequel to The End of Man, and this is When the Gods Fall Asleep, 1972. And this character, again, was put in a mental institution. He now escapes, and basically what we follow is him go through a slew of these kind of run-ins with a bunch of different people and stop this extreme violence. There's a giant gang fight in this kind of stream with some bad choreographed fighting, where they're fighting over kind of a woman, and what happens is they all come together for a common goal, and that's kind of cool and unique, and I do think that it can be human nature at times. And then we also follow him stop this woman from her eyes being gouged out, but there's a 20-minute segment of arguing and all these kind of things here to see the culture. Regardless, this is probably the weakest in the set, because it's a continuation of a character that I wasn't very much interested in at all. And I think the philosophy and the esoteric stuff he says in the beginning, or the kind of weird stuff, it just doesn't land as well. It seems very teenage, kind of like, what if, like, we're just a speck in the universe kind of stuff. And it's just like, okay, I just feel too old for this now, I guess. Maybe I'm not edgelord enough anymore. I don't know. But I just don't really care for these two films. And this one is probably the biggest offender of them. It's just very disjointed and very kind of just meandering all over the place and never comes together with anything. The thing he does use a lot, though, is he'll use a lot of classical music and do melodies of that throughout his films. And also, I feel like I was hearing bigger songs and bigger music, but just kind of like toned down so you can't really catch it. Like, I feel like I heard Burning Bridges by the Kelly's Heroes by Mike's Congregation or whatever. I think I feel like I heard that song in there, Burning Bridges, but it was just kind of toned and stripped away of a lot of things so they could get away with it. But regardless, When the Gods Fall Asleep and End of Man are not really my thing. They kind of, I dislike Coffin Joe when he's trying to be Yoderowski. I like him better when he's more like Yoderowski. I'm not interested. I like him more when he's like, you know, the horror directors that I enjoy and directors of that nature. I think he does it better. Okay, next up is from 76, and this is The Strange Hostel of Naked Pleasures, and this one is, there's a big gap here, right? Because we had 72 there. There's one missing here, for sure, a horror film that a lot of people probably would not include, called The Bloody Exorcism of Coffin Joe, which is supposed to be a very meta, unique, cool film, which I didn't get a chance to watch, but it is out there on YouTube. I think there's probably music rights or some issue like that, but The Strange Hostel of Naked Pleasures, here we go. This one is horror, but it's kind of like weird, kind of, not exactly horror, but horror enough, I guess you'd say. So, essentially, Coffin Joe opens this hostel, and he kind of feels like a mixture of his character still from When the Gods Fall Asleep, not exactly Coffin Joe, and he has like this weird kind of following, and he calls for people to show up for work, and he picks a couple people, and then he always has vacancies. Like, he's like some sort of entity, of course, and these people come in, and strange things happen to them. There's lots of sex, there's lots of nudity, there's lots of trippy visuals. A lot of this is in color. In the opening, we have these kind of nice little sets and color and gels and all these kind of things going on. Overall, this is a weird one. This is a strange one. This one is also kind of disjointed in a lot of ways, but better than the other two previous films, but probably the third least of my favorites on here, but still worth a watch, still worth a look. Very colorful, very cool, very weird. But still kind of like, he's just still kind of doing that kind of trippy, weird, bizarre thing here with this one. But regardless, it's worth your time. Check it out. The next one we have is Hellish Flesh from 1977. And this one is short and very simple, but pretty effective. Now, it probably would have worked better as like a short, to be honest. So what we have here is Coffin Joe, or Jose, is playing this, or is it Jose? It kind of might be Jose, because Brazil, I don't think the J is a silent Jose, and like Spanish is typical. I'm not sure exactly how that works. But Marins essentially plays this doctor, and he's doing these experiments. He's working with acid. He has a wife who is an adulteress. She is cheating on him with his friend, and they plan to get rid of Coffin Joe so they can get the money, the moolah. What happens is they dump a hot vat of acid in his face and set fire to his lab, hoping that he dies and they can collect the money. It doesn't work that way, but she still has access to tons and tons of money while he's in the hospital getting reconstructive surgery. This is where they actually use real footage of Coffin Joe's actual eye surgery he had that he filmed, and we see that incorporated into the film. So always trying to push people's buttons and do something crazy and different. So essentially what happens is this boy toy basically that his wife has is going around sleeping with tons of women, taking her money and wasting it and just having as much sex as he possibly can and throwing money everywhere. And Coffin Joe has hired a detective to wander around and help her out and make sure she has money and just do the best he can for her. So you think he's maybe altruistic and forgiving of her, but you know, something's got to be happening. Something's got to be up Coffin Joe's sleeve, right? So as the film progresses, we see Coffin Joe has like made it, he's all burnt up, but I was like, is he wearing a mask a la Phantom? I could never tell if it was supposed to be a mask, kind of like Night Killer by Fragazzo. He's like, is the killer supposed to look like that, or is he wearing a mask? I don't know, who knows. But essentially the twist in here is perfect and I love it. It's an ultimate just desserts. I think it's worth your time. I think it's a good one. I enjoyed it, and especially because of the ending, especially how it unfolds. This one overall is a good one. This is Hellish Flesh, good stuff. Very simple, very different for Coffin Joe, I would say, for his directing style, and a little less, you know, crazier than the last a few of his films, and a little less ballsy, but a little bit more simple, but still worth your time. Hellish Flesh, I enjoyed it. Okay, next up is Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind from 1978. Now, this one is unique for the fact that this predates Wes Craven's New Nightmare, it predates Fulci's Cat in the Brain, and they mention so in the special features. So what we have here is this doctor who is kind of cracking. He's a philosophy doctor, I think, or a psychiatrist. I think he's a psychiatrist. And basically, he starts cracking because he pictures that Coffin Joe, the character from the films, is real. He's going to come in and steal his perfect wife and take her away. So he starts to panic. He's having these nervous breakdowns. He's having these nightmares that incorporate all the gore from Coffin Joe films. I don't know how much of the gore was actually shot for this, or just incorporating movies in the set. There's a bunch of that, but I don't know which ones aren't in the set because Coffin Joe directed like 30 fucking movies. So I don't know which ones are actually made for this movie. I'm not too sure if any of them are, you know what I mean? But there's just a lot of this crazy imagery and gore. God knows he has enough of it to choose from. So essentially what happens is the guy's colleagues call in Jose Mojica Myrons, and he gets to play himself, and they say, we need your help, man. We need you to tell this guy basically that your character is not real, that it's all bullshit, and we're going to hypnotize him and all these kind of things. So what happens is these giant, like, kind of crazy hallucinations of this guy, where Coffin Joe is in his kind of dreams and introducing him into these hallucinations and be like, yes. And then he's seeing clips from the movie. So it's kind of a clip show in one aspect, but it's also a super unique kind of thing in another, because it predates the movies that we would associate it with, where they're playing meta, where a character, a director comes in and he's basically playing himself, right? So it's really weird, really bizarre and interesting, to be honest. Overall, Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind is not the best made movie of a lot, and it is kind of weird after watching all these Coffin Joe movies that you see basically all these clips and everything like that. But I will say that the conceptually it's very unique and very cool, and overall, of course, it's going to have a twist. But Hallucinations of a Deranged Mind was a nice little touch to this set. Enjoyed it. Now we're going to move on to the last film of the set, Embodiment of Evil from 2008. Now, this is a send-off to Coffin Joe. This is Coffin Joe's final film that he directed. This is also the final Coffin Joe film. So it was so cool to see them make a Coffin Joe movie in 2008. So it has, basically, Coffin Joe has been in prison. We have some flashbacks, of course, how he got out of the last thing, how he survived. And he's in prison. And it is true in Brazil that you can only serve a maximum sentence of 35 years and then they have to let you out or something along those lines. Some of the most prolific serial killers in the entire world in history were let go because of that. You know, talking hundreds of children's victims, and they had to let them go just because it's in their law. So in the beginning, Coffin Joe is released and everybody's very upset about it. Everybody's freaking out. As he walks out, he's picked up by Bruno, his sidekick from the second film. And it's really funny, kind of fish out of water, where he looks around and he's like, what is this? You know, it's like the city. He's released in a big city and he doesn't understand what the hell's happening. At this point, he's kind of a cult item and he has followers, these two women and two guys, and they're all just basically follow him. They apply their allegiance, but at the same time, there's a couple officers who are after him, some military officers and a priest who Coffin Joe did some really bad things to them and their families, so they want him out of the picture and they're going to come after him no matter what. But Coffin Joe still has his eyes set on that prize, right? Passing on a child, passing on his genetic, his bloodline has to be immortal. So he starts to focus on these witches. Some of the witches' characters come back from the previous films, which is really cool. You got to incorporate the witches here. So the daughter is there of one of them, very young, and he starts having his henchmen kidnap all these women around, and he's putting through all these tortures and killing some of them and sleeping with tons of them and all sorts of weird kind of things, like they're trying to impregnate them, while at the same time they're getting closer and closer to Coffin Joe until the climax. Unfortunately, throughout this film, one of the main villain died halfway through the movie. He caught pneumonia and died, so they kind of had to switch things around. They do give him an end. They tie it up. It's not perfect, but it works. It works fine. It is what it is. I will say that the ending did seem a little more rushed than I would have liked. I would have liked to draw that out a little bit, see what some of the henchmen did and what happened to him. It's just kind of really fast-paced and a little sad. But overall, I love this. I thought this was great. I think it's up there with the second one. Not necessarily. There's a crazy hell sequence, which is even nuts. It's gory. And the special effects are really good, really strong. Imagery is great. To see him work with the kind of newer technology, you're like, man, I wish Coffin Joe at this age would have made 10 movies, because they're gory and they're good. And during that time, 2006 was when it was made, but released in 2008, there was a lot of gory films. Almost every horror film was really nasty and really gory at the time, which I can appreciate. And Coffin Joe, Embodiment of Evil, is no different. This is a good one. This is one of my favorites of the set. It's a great send-off to the actor and director. It pays homage. It works really well, incorporating the old footage too, or the new old footage, if that makes any sense. Overall, I really enjoyed the Embodiment of Evil. I would recommend it. Overall, this whole set is really excellent, really fun, really good stuff, really interesting. Only two movies I didn't like out of 11. And there's some great ones too, at least four or five that I thought were really great to good. So that's a plus. As far as the features are concerned, we're going to go through them all together. So this is going to be a lot, okay? We have archival interviews, I think, on almost all the films with Jose Marins. So I'm not going to go over that, okay? But then on top of that, we have Coffin Joe's Sedan Underworld, new video essay by film scholar Lindsay Holland. Damn, the Strange World of Jose Mojica Marins, a definitive documentary on the life and work of Jose Marins by Andre Bukowski and Ivan Finotti. Bloody Kingdom, Jose Mojica Marins' first short film with director's commentary. The Adventures, Fate, and My Destiny Your Hands, excerpts from early works by the director. And then we have here, we have... I'm sorry about that. I'm skipping the commentaries. A Sanctuary of Cinema, a new interview with Stephen Thoreau examining the early works and influence of Marins. That's great stuff. Like I said, he points out lots of things and goes on for like 30 minutes about him. He's always interesting and always has a lot to say. On tonight's horror show, a new video essay by film scholar Miranda Kocharian, looking at the mythic figure of Coffin Joe within the canon of horror host. Very cool as well. Alternative ending for Strange World of Coffin Joe. And then we have, of course, the end of Jose... Oh, wait. Okay, sorry. The Strange Mind... Strange Mind of Coffin Joe, a new interview with author Guy Adams exploring the esoteric aspects of Jose Mojica Marins. A Woman for Joe, a new video essay by film scholar Alexandra Heller Nicholas exploring the complex gender politics of Marins' filmography. And that's kind of interesting as well, because you know he's so brutal to women in the Coffin Joe films, but at the same time he kind of it's a weird dichotomy and everything like that. Very interesting, worth watching. And then we also have the demonic surrealism of Coffin Joe, a new interview with film scholar and filmmaker Virginia Salvini exploring the parallels between the work of Jose Mojica Marins and the European and South American surrealistic movements. Definitely worth watching. I know that they talk about Jodorowsky and some features like that. Delirium, Surrealism, and Vision, a new interview with author Jack Sargent. Okay, very good as well. I watched all the features, and then they all blurred together, but I learned a lot. Apostle of Evil, a new interview with Denison Ramalho, co-writer of Embodiment Evil, about his early connection to Coffin Joe. That's good stuff, because he was actually friends with him and worked on Embodiment of Evil, so he has an insight that a lot of other people do not. Mojica in the Snow, Tonight I Incarnate at Sundance, footage of Marins attending the Sundance Film Festival in 2001, A Blind Date for Coffin Joe, a short film by Raymond Coffin Ray Castilli. And then we have Aesthetics of Garbage, Jose Mojica Marins, a complicated icon, a new interview with filmmaker Andrew Lavoie, The Search of Wang Wang, examining Marins' place in marginal cinema movements of the 60s and 70s. This I liked, because this guy is the Australian filmmaker, and he mentions all sorts of stuff about him that I just, insights that I think were really well done. Beyond Good and Evil, new video essay by film critic Cat Ellinger. Gotta have Cat Ellinger talk about Coffin Joe. Well, welcomed, of course. And then, of course, we have Learning from a Master, new interview with screenwriter Dennis Romalho, Fantasia Film Festival premiere footage, archival footage of Jose Marins at the film's premiere, Apprenticeship of Evil, an archival interview with Romalho, pays tribute to Jose Marins and Fantasia's Fest, Mitch Davis, official making of, the experiment of making of, two archival features, deleted scenes, and that's with the Embodiment of Evil. So basically they talk about his death and all that kind of thing as well on here. It's a sad thing. They should make a whole new definitive documentary about Coffin Joe, like a brand new one. I guess you could just cut all these stuff up and make your own. But regardless, it's a great set with a booklet as well. Just a beautiful looking set. You'll see it when I go through it and everything like that. Highly recommended for fans. Wait till, obviously, it's not out of print. Do not panic. They're going to reissue it, I'm sure of it. But yeah. great set. Really liked it. Really enjoyed going through it, except for those two films. They got me a little upset just because they're right in the middle, and I was like, please don't all be like this, because you start so strong, and we end really strong. But there's that little gap in the middle where I was just like, that's enough. But those two are just not for me. But they're interesting nonetheless to see where his work kind of varied and different. I guess, you know, he's not just a horror director. He's a transgressive, progressive filmmaker, surrealist, all these kind of weird things like that. So great stuff. Good set. Coffin Joe. Inside the Mind of Coffin Joe. Okay, now we're going to get into the 1981 movies. I'm not going to do the intro because this isn't even a horror movie. But I'm going to talk about any cult films that I can, to be honest, when it goes to 1981. And I couldn't skip this one. Believe it or not, I never watched it. It is John Waters' Polyester. I know it's not a horror film, but it's a comedy. It's a cult. It's John Waters. It's got Divine. It's got Tab Hunter. It's got Mig Stole. It's got a bunch of people in here. So I watched this. It's from Criterion. And I must say, I absolutely love this thing. I could not stop laughing. This is one of the funniest movies I've seen in such a long time. As John Waters says, you gotta know good taste to make good bad taste. And geez, Polyester is exactly that. So Divine is in an awful marriage with her husband Elmer, who is a porn kind of, he runs a porn theater. He wears a terrible toupee. They both have two awful kids, one of which who just sleeps around and hangs out with a degenerate named Bobo, and the other who is a foot stomper. And you can see a lot of the influences, if you know anything about John Waters, a lot of the stuff where he talks about, you know, being, you know, obsessed or in correspondence with Jerry Bierdos, the serial killer who cut off people's feet. So we get that stomping of the feet. That's definitely from that. And we also have on the news comes on, you hear a Manson family person has escaped or been released. And he had that long correspondence with Leslie Van Houten from the Manson family. So like all these little touches and details in there. But essentially, Divine is just very unhappy. He plays a woman in this film, very unhappy with her marriage in here to her husband. And also, who is it? Edie, basically the egg woman from Pink Flamingos, is their best friend. She used to be the nanny, but now she's basically come across a bunch of money, so she's learning French, and she's very hilarious in this. Absolutely gold. Divine's mother is a monster in this. Absolutely hates her and is always saying awful shit. All the characters in here are hilarious. Divine is perfect. The acting is perfect because everyone is aware how they're acting, and this is such a hard tone to get. I don't know how John Waters does it, because I wouldn't call it's bad on purpose. I would call it melodramatic, right? Melodramatic in the weirdest kind of zany way, but I wouldn't even call it, it's got to be a satire. It's satirical in a weird kind of way, but it's so funny and so dark, and I just love this damn thing. So essentially, the husband and her get a divorce, but the husband wants to basically torture her, and all this stuff is so funny. Divine becomes this alcoholic, and her delivery is just the funniest. His delivery is just the funniest fucking thing ever. At one point, he drops this liquor, and he's like, no! And I just started cracking up hysterically. Tab Hunter is perfect in this. He ends up being a love interest for Divine, and he is fucking great. He sings the music in here, and he's got like this kind of redneck West Virginia charm. He's really funny in it. Really recommend the performances in here. I can't believe this movie had me laughing this hard. It was really nice, honestly, to see something this fucking funny and this clever and this demented and twisted all at the same time. I really just wish Divine lived longer. I wish it's such a strange, sad thing that they died so young, because I could honestly imagine them changing the face of like cinema, because if they would have lived longer, things would have been completely different, honestly. But this movie's brilliant. I just don't know how to say it. I think I prefer it over Pink Flamingos. I laughed much harder. It's not as disgusting or as gross as Pink Flamingos, but for the most part, I feel like this movie is just way more accessible to people. And I normally am not the guy who's going to be into, you know, what's accessible and what's not is going to determine what I like. But this one has just flowed so well. And this is a movie I would like to show other people and just laugh hysterically while watching it. Every line in here is great. The style is really funny as well. And there's times when I thought this was like the scenes, is like, is this a dream sequence? Or is this going to wake up and it's going to be even worse for Divine? But no, like it's just brilliant. It ends fast. It's super fast. An hour, 26 minutes, doesn't wear out. It's welcome. None of the jokes fall flat. I laughed literally at everything. Enjoyed every second of it. It's a masterpiece in bad taste. I love this thing. Polyester. Great stuff. Criterion Blu-ray looks great. Sounds great. Very funny. Okay. So next up is the Patreon pick. And I don't remember who picked this, but this is Ty West Innkeepers from what? 2011, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And I had never seen Innkeepers. You know, I had seen all Ty West films, all his horror films, from The Roost to Cabin Fever 2, of course, House of the Devil. And the only stuff I never really cared for by Ty West was definitely the ABC's A Death His segment and the VHS segment he did. I thought were very poor. I don't know what was wrong with them, but they just were really bad and not up to snuff. So I thought, I kind of wrote Ty West off as a horror director. I was like, he's done. He's not going to make any more. And, you know, he's just like, maybe he's not that great anyway. Well, yada, yada, yada. But if I look back on it, most of the movies I've watched from him, I've enjoyed, including The Sacrament. And then his two, of course, X and Pearl, I think were excellent. So Ty West is a pretty solid horror director. There's nothing, as far as his feature films are concerned, that I disliked. And The Innkeepers, I would throw in that as well. I really enjoyed this one. So basically, it follows two people who are kind of half-assed ghost hunters who are supposed to close down this hotel. It's closing, you know, this is the last weekend there. They have very minimal guests, one of which is actually played by Kelly McGillis, and she's playing, like, this ex-actress who's now into, like, mysticism and stuff like that. And she's basically one of the last guests, as well as an old man who wanted to stay in this one room. And of course, this mother who has a child who's kind of leaving her husband. So basically, it's just two of them staying here with this minimal amount of guests. The hotel has a haunted history, has a haunted past. We kind of are given to what happened. Somebody hung themselves. It's a dark kind of past. Pat Healy is in here as one of the hotel clerks. He's fucking excellent. Pat Healy has been in so many movies, Cheap Thrills, and he's just always good. He's just an underrated actor for sure. Pat Healy is one of the guys that I wish would get a huge breakthrough. He's in big movies. I just wish he would be a star in something, you know? But anyways, he's an excellent actor. He's great in this too. And a lot of this movie is just a hangout movie. There's the two characters. I can't think of the actress's name. Sarah Paxton. And I know that name for sure, but it's basically Sarah Paxton and Pat Healy bouncing off each other. And there's obviously some chemistry that Pat Healy has there. And they're just going back and forth. They're fun. They're zany. They're weird. There's a lot of quirky, weird characters that pop up here and there, but everyone's really strong in it. The dialogue is really good. It's funny, and it's surprisingly dark. There's a couple moments that are actually like horror scenes, and it gets really dark. And I was just like, this movie's getting that dark. And like, this could be PG-13 if you cut out some F-bombs, and maybe I think there's some language for sure. And you cut out some of the violence, but the scenes of violence are so gratuitous, and there's only like two or three, that it's just like, holy shit. There is, of course, some suicide. There's a suicide in here shown, and it's brutal. And the end of this film is sad and weird and depressing and kind of shocking that they did it. But overall, I think this is a strong film, and you got to give it up for having that tone, for having those guts to go there, you know? Overall, it does turn into a ghost story at the end. A lot of people said, I don't know if it would, because you could say this. I was like, I don't see it that way. I really do see it as a horror show, and I think it works well. Overall, I'm just happy with it. I'm glad I finally watched it. I put off it for so long because everyone said it was, it's an hour and 41 minutes, right? It's an 101 minutes. So like, that's long for a horror ghost story where people are like, nothing happens. And I watched it. I was like, no, it's pretty good. The dialogue was good. The acting was good. The scares were good. The location was good. The cinematography was good. No complaints. Good movie. Should have watched it 10 years ago. 15 years ago. But hey, here it is. The Innkeepers by Ty West. Good stuff. Glad I finally watched it. Recommended. I don't think he's made a bad feature film. I haven't seen his two westerns. I know some people don't like The Sacrament for reasons. Roost isn't great, but it's low budget. It's okay. It's decent. You know, the only ones I didn't care for were Shorts. But overall, I think Ty West, pretty solid director. Looking forward to Maxine. All right, let's get these questions, comments, concerns. What do we got here? Ken Coakley. I just rediscovered a horror series thanks to Stars. I revisited the first VHS films. I have to admit that I like found footage films, and this is no different. The first segment in the first film had me on the edge of my seat. The standout in the second film was a segment with the guy wearing the camera on his helmet becoming a zombie. I always wanted to see a zombie's POV. I kind of expected George Romero's Diary of the Dead to cover that. My only problem with the zombie wearing the GoPro camera shooting himself in the head. In George Romero's zombie universe, it's a lofty task for a zombie to handle a gun. Even Bub was a little rusty. Anyways, my favorite segment. The third one was the kids in Mexico skateboarding. The chant music was eerie. The music reminded me of the score to Alejandro Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain. I know there's a fourth film, but I haven't seen it yet. There's actually three more. There's 94, 99, and 85. 85 just came out in 2023. Recommend 85. Pretty good stuff. But I also get the Arrow TV app where they release the Films of Coffin Joe box set. Those films are great, and I'm sure you'll be reviewing some of them. I can't wait to hear your perspective. Keep up the good work. Yeah, I just reviewed all of them. From that set, at least. Explosive Action, another quality update, entertaining me while in the hospital with appendicitis. Hoping to get my Severn title soon. Feeling vindicated, I skipped the dead one. It looked boring from the trailer. Man, heal up, Explosive Action. Check out his channel, too, if you like action. Guy knows a lot. Smart guy. Zach Nolan, do you sometimes get annoyed when a title is announced only to get a release date months or something, sometimes over a year later? Seems like I've been waiting on Trick or Treat 86 for quite a while now. First world problems. Do you know if Miss 45 will ever get a re-release? I could be wrong, but I believe it's out of print. Abel Ferreira for president. I don't know if Miss 45 is getting a re-release. I really think it should. I have a disc myself because I bought it right when it came out, and I know some people missed out on that or weren't even collecting at the time. It's been like 10 years probably, but it really should get a re-release. It's a great movie. A great movie. Yes, sometimes I do, but Synapse is pretty much meticulous with it, so Trick or Treat or Deadly Spawn, we've been waiting a long time, but at least we know they're coming. It gives me something to look forward to living, all right? I'm going to stay alive so I can watch Trick or Treat and Deadly Spawn on Blu-ray. Groggy 1971, he says, Trignon, don't pronounce the T, so Rignon. So Jean-Louis Rignon? Is that how you say his name? Let me know. Appreciate it. Thank you. The Nick Moore from Belgium. Following your recommendations, I ordered the special edition of Becky. Going by the recent reissue of The Lost, Ronin Flicks are probably excellent home media providers. They're all right. I also bought the Hellraiser Quartet of Torment box set. While it drops a thing or two from the Scarlet box, it adds so much more. The upgraded book, Hellraiser 4, of course, new documentaries. I was shown many sights indeed. So thank you again for lighting the way, sir. Like a tougher, gruffer Jimmy Cricket. Okay, questions. I recently you gave Exist a less than stellar review. I'm not this film's biggest fan either. Were you disappointed that it was Eduardo Sanchez movie who did Blair Witch and Lovely Molly, two films that do have merit? I mean, it's here's the thing. The movie is effective and it scares. It's just, I just don't care. I hate the characters. I hate watching it. I feel like it should be a 10-minute movie, and it's like 4 hours. It's not 4 hours, but it's just kind of like it was very much a product of its time. I think a lot of it is done well. It's just not. I just don't like the film in general. I think it's boring, yada, yada, yada. And I said Eduardo Sanchez is the one I really liked was Altered. I think that's a great movie. I haven't watched Blair Witch in years, and I never saw Loving Molly, but I think he's a good director, obviously. So seeing as Narnia isn't your type of movie, which Children of Fantasy film is or was more to your liking? As a kid, I liked The Neverending Story, although it's been years. I loved Masters of the Universe. I liked Willow as a kid. It's been years since I watched that. I liked Star Wars as a kid. You know, like, that's kind of, I guess, what you're going for. And in terms of non-fantasy film or children or fantasy film, children's films, we're talking Little Monsters, Monster Squad, Goonies. I liked a lot of kids' movies growing up. But Disney ones, too. You know, I liked Something Wicked This Way Comes if we're talking kids' movies. But as far as fantasy, I would go Neverending Story was one I came back to a lot. And of course, you know, I liked Masters of the Universe and Willow. So, long live and prosper. See you later. Okay. Oh, he says, love your latest discussion on The Burning with Dustin Mills. Always interesting to hear you discuss slashers with someone who might not have seen all of them like we have. And then video, what is this? Manga Mismo? I agree with you on the dead one. I sold the day after I watched it. It's fun to have seen it, but not something I would ever go back to. I did enjoy the music in the film, though. I don't agree with everything you weigh about Raiders of the Living Dead. I also thought that was a boring one. Nothing almost happened, but when something does, it just does not make sense at all. Laserdisc player turns into a laser weapon, and then you have the terrible ending. Yeah, not my thing. Cemetery Man is one of my favorites, though. Same with Monster Squad. I still need to watch The Sunday Women. Yeah, I don't blame you for not liking Raiders of the Living Dead. That's not a movie I'm going to bat for. I'm like, it is what it is, right? But yeah, we don't have anything. I don't have an update. I have stuff coming, but hey, I don't have it with me, so we're just gonna get out of here. All right, guys, thank you very much for watching, and as always, have a good one. Bing.